Hello and welcome to the What's Your Problem podcast. I'm your host, Amy Bull, and I'm with Astrid Limmel from the Hustle Factory today. Welcome.
Thank you. Hi.
You are very welcome. Thank you for travelling up from London.
No worries.
Appreciate it. So if we just kick off with who you are and what you're doing at the moment.
Yeah, sure. So I'm Astrid. I'm the co-founder of the Hustle Factory. And the Hustle Factory has been going for 3-4 years now. We've been trading for 1.5 years and we offer career transition support, both B2C, but mainly B2B at the moment. And I can explain a little bit more about that. But it's all about careers and being okay with changing, returning to work, looking for work, going up the ladder, or just simply giving your career a bit of a boost.
Mm-hmm. It's an interesting time to be in that kind of environment because there's a lot going on politically, but also work-wise, there seems to be quite a number of people that are being displaced, if you like, so being made redundant or perhaps in a redeployment situation. Do you think that that's more so now than ever before?
I think every generation sees something like this, right? And I think that the displacement that's happening is probably a really bad conjunction of COVID, AI, economic downturn. And yeah, there's a lot happening. What I do think is a really positive thing is that redundancies, even though is a really crap time, it's becoming less and less of a taboo and people are talking about it. It goes back to, you know, the 2 years ago, everyone was having a bit of a faff on LinkedIn about whether or not they put open to work or hiring or whatever, that circle on their photo. I think we're now, it's a very normal thing to say, I've been made redundant. Everyone mm-hmm. understands that it's not you, it's not that you've been bad at your job. It's just that there's circumstances and businesses are having to make redundancies. And that's where we come in because there's a huge lack of support in this country for redundancies, for people that have been out of work for a while. Mm-hmm. And even for people that don't want to be made redundant and are thinking about where do I go next and how do I make my career work best for me?
Mm-hmm. So give us a little bit more of a flavour about perhaps some of the services that Hustle Factory offer.
So I'll go back to where we started. So uh-huh. when we launched about 1.5 years ago, we were gung-ho. My co-founder has been a business, a careers coach for 25 years. And when we launched, we kind of thought, okay, we're going to go for the B2C clients. We're going to show them that they should invest in themselves and buy these programs with coaching, with courses, and the community, which is one of the main things that we love about ourselves. And it kind of flopped. I think we misread or we thought that it would work faster than it did. Mm-hmm. And last summer, so about 6 months in, after sadly spending too much on marketing, we pivoted and we decided that actually it shouldn't be, the onus shouldn't be on just individuals on trying to figure out their careers, but actually businesses should probably support a little bit better, a bit mm-hmm. like parental leave or flexible working. It might be interesting for businesses to understand how to better manage their workforce, and actually every world is small and people that are being made redundant might come back in the future. And so we pivoted to B2B. We haven't reinvented the wheel. It existed. It's called outplacement. Mm-hmm. Some people call it offboarding. Mm-hmm. And it's all about supporting your employee as they're being made redundant and they need to leave the business. Now, we cost about one week worth of their salary. So mm-hmm. what we often say to prospective clients and to clients is just fire a bit faster, but give them that week of salary mm-hmm. that you would have spent on keeping them in the business because you felt bad or you were, mm-hmm. you know, thinking about things, and they'll have a lot more to bounce back and feel. I think psychologically, it really gives those employees so much more support than just learning how to do your LinkedIn or your CV. You also feel better. You get access to our community and you meet other people that are going through the same issues. Mm-hmm. And you learn, and you learn for the future. And mm-hmm. today people have 11 jobs in their career, which is huge compared to, you know, 50 years ago. So I think, yes, it's happening more, to come back to your question. Mm-hmm. It's happening more. Yes and no, but I think it's happening with a little bit more positivity, if I can, mm-hmm. if I can say that. But yes, it's definitely stressful times.
And I think I'd like to unpack a couple of things there, because there's quite a lot of information in there. And I think let's go back to when you went to pivot to change.
Yeah.
Did you at that point think we should stop altogether? Was that one of your options?
So the way we started is that we did a first round of raising some cash to kind of get us off the ground. And we ummed and awed about this a lot. We didn't know if we wanted to. We didn't know if we wanted to have that stress of owing friends and family some mm-hmm. cash. And then a few friends and a few family members said, listen, we believe in you. We support you. Go for it. Like, okay, well, they're grown-ups. They know that this might not come back. Let's actually believe in ourselves. We know we have a great product. So we raised. And so 6 months in, when we needed to pivot, we had spent a bit of the money. And I think that was a bit of the calling came at that stage. We're like, okay, we're actually probably not spending this the right way. Mm-hmm. Let's pivot to something that's going to potentially work better, because we had given it enough time. I always try and give things between 3 and 6 months mm-hmm. before figuring out if it's not working. Mm-hmm. And then it's a bit like at the moment, I can fast forward a year's time. January this year, we decided to raise again. Mm-hmm. And I've just gone through 6 months of raising, and mm-hmm. I've done that 100% of the time. That was all I did. And it's not working as well as I thought it would either. And instead of just continuing on the same road, because some people tell you it can take up to 3 years, we've decided to split. And now I spent 50% of my time raising and 50% of my time doing sales, on top of everything else, obviously. So how did we come to the decision? I think it's understanding. I'd like to say I read the data, I understand my numbers, I've done research. Actually, it comes down to a lot of instinct. Yeah. And having a co-founder that, okay, you're feeling the same thing. Okay, something's not working. We both agree. Let's not try and make, you know, a round circle fit into a square peg. Whatever the expression
square
is.
Square peg into a round hole.
There you go. That's the one. I think the businesses that work best are the ones that are able to test and mm-hmm. experiment. And you have to be really agile and just do something for a bit. It's not working. Stop it altogether, or reduce it and go on to something else and learn from that.
I think it's quite important to think about the market that you're approaching as well. Is it the right market? Is it the right market conditions? Do they have, you know, if it's a product that you're asking for money for from those particular people, do they have money to pay for it? Is it just timing? Is it a timing thing? Because I think you'd find a lot of founders would say it was darkest before the dawn. Mm. And that is very true in many businesses. And I think probably what a lot of people don't realize is that a lot of big businesses, as well as small businesses, run so delicately on that line between making it or failing. Mm-hmm. And when I mean failing, what I mean is, you know, not having the money to continue on, or not having the product idea, or whatever it might be. And I think people don't realize how much of a tightrope that really is for people. And that can be quite daunting, can't it?
It can be super daunting. We're actually in the thick of it at the moment. You know, we've got a runway that we push with every client that comes in. We push our runway a little bit further. We don't pay ourselves at the moment. Mm-hmm. I've been lucky to have a bit of savings and a husband that kind of supports me doing this. But we signed for the story. We signed a client in a few weeks ago, and I have a 2-year-old, and I sent them a message to my co-founder. I was like, we've got a client. She's in. And she messaged me back, yay, we can put Nina in nursery. And that was just, that's how fine that line is. Mm-hmm. And we both know that that's the priority, because if she's mm-hmm. not in nursery, I can't work.
Yeah.
So there's like this, yeah, it's a really fine line. And I think that it's grit and mm-hmm. being super stubborn and believing in yourself. I think before we launched the company, we had done enough market research. My co-founder knew enough about the industry to know that this was something that was needed. Mm-hmm. Did I realize the amount of education I was going to have to do to potential B2B clients? Probably not. Mm-hmm. But I don't think you're ever going to know everything 100% anyway. Mm-hmm. So at some stage, you've got to just take the plunge and learn as you go.
And I think the challenge with a lot of businesses, having been in that space where I was offering technology to offboard people through redeployment or redundancy schemes and trying to make it a bit more human for people, companies, again, they're making decisions what feels at the last minute, and then all of a sudden they need you. So you have to be prepared and ready to run at their pace immediately with your product ready to go. And, you know, you got a bit of the swan light going on with your feet pedaling really fast under the water, a nice swan light, you know, calm, and everything's great. And we've got everything organized. Don't worry. We've got you. We've got our arms around you. Mm. So how did it start? So I know we kind of launched into challenges already, but how did the Hustle Factory start? What made you decide that this is the kind of thing that seems interesting? I want to do this.
Yeah, it's definitely very, very personal and all about my experience. So as I said, my co-founder has been a careers coach for 25 years. I actually started in graphic design, went into art direction, creative direction, and I was hired by a group of investors about 10 years ago now to start a business. They were selling B2B. I was asked to start the B2C branch, and that was all very e-commerce. I was designing furniture. Mm-hmm. I had a buyer's cap. I launched a website in just over a year with about 3,500 SKUs. Never do that again, but it was super fun. I call it my mini MBA because when I started that year, I didn't know what a P&L was. I had never built a team. There's so many things I learned as I progressed, and it was amazing. I think it was one of the best years of my life. And I discovered a huge part of me, which was that I love building teams. I love having people doing things that I have no clue how to do, but I know how to trust. I know how to delegate. I am a pretty good manager. And I also discovered that I love building something from scratch and that strategy side of things that I really appreciated. After that year and a bit, I went on to running my own business, doing branding, going back to that creative side. And then my clients all dropped me as I got pregnant. So that was kind of the first little glimpse of, oh, the working world is not great for women who have children. But I won't go into that debate today. And then I got a job just at the start of COVID. And it was an awesome job again. I was managing director of a marketing agency who were based in the US, wanted to open an office in London. So again, it was that, you know, opening a team, building a team, and COVID hit. I burnt out really, really heavily. Within about 9 months, it was heavy burnout. And I honestly didn't believe in burnout. Mm-hmm. I thought burnout was for losers. You just sleep, just get over it. You'll be fine.
Just have a little rest and everything will be okay.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I was crying at breakfast, and I honestly, I'm a good crier. I will cry easily, but crying at breakfast is something I had never done before. Mm-hmm. And I'll always remember my brother being there and seeing me cry at 9 o'clock before going to my desk and looking at me and being like, you know, this isn't normal, right? And it took him to make me realize that crying at breakfast wasn't okay. Mm-hmm. After that, I had conversations with my boss. They gave me, we agreed that this just wasn't going to work out. And I was really lucky. They gave me gardening leave. So they gave me, I was obviously made redundant, but I got 6 months pay. Mm-hmm. And I kind of sat there. This was late 2020. Mm-hmm. And I sat there thinking, I can't not do anything with this money. I can't just sit on this pot of cash and just live my life while I look for something else. So I decided to invest in myself. And I got a careers coach, who's now my business partner. I got a sports coach twice a week because I am a strong believer that your body needs to be okay for you to be okay in your head. Mm-hmm. I got a full-time nanny, even though I wasn't working. Well, this was for 1 month, by the way. I wasn't going to go forever, but it was kind of resetting those batteries. And I got a therapist. Mm-hmm. At the time, loads of stuff was happening in the background, including my mother being diagnosed with cancer. So all of that had created this like massive storm, and I took it by the horns and reset. And it's the best money I've ever spent. It cost me a lot, but it's the best money I ever spent on myself. Mm-hmm. And I kind of got to a stage where everything ended. And my careers coach at the time said, listen, you've got all these interests in building businesses. And we had obviously worked on my soft skills and my drives mm-hmm. and my values. And what did I want to do? And creativity was always a big part of me. But I think, yes, I can draw, I can do graphics, I've got a good eye for interiors. But actually, I think the creativity in me, what I discovered at that time was that I love creating, building mm-hmm. things. And so we sat down and thought about how we could implement what she loves, what I love. We wanted to work together. She had a great week. We thought really, really big picture. We had co-working spaces with nurseries and people that were going to come and work. And you know, we brought it all back down and worked on an MVP. But that's where it really started. Mm-hmm. And I got to a stage where I wanted to do a job or something that I knew was going to help others. Mm-hmm. And I know it's all that, you know, it can be quite trendy, midlife crisis, something with purpose. I probably hit quite a lot of those cliches. but
you're kind of dinging all the bells as you go across, aren't you? Ding, 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 ding.
Exactly. But I feel like our customers today, we bring such huge value to their lives. Mm-hmm. And I'm having loads of fun building a business and doing this at the same time. I love my co-founder. We work really well together. And so it's been a really interesting journey. And I just love a good adventure as well. I love building something new and seeing what's going to happen. And who knows what this business will be in 10 years' time. But right now, I'm on a bit of a crusade mm-hmm. to get outplacement to be a bit more of a norm. Mm-hmm. And get people a bit more support when life gets tough.
Mm-hmm. So for people that perhaps don't know what outplacement means, because it's not necessarily, if you haven't been made redundant or you've not been around people that have or been part of that kind of process, you perhaps don't necessarily know what outplacement might mean for individuals. Perhaps maybe get into that a little bit.
Yeah. So outplacement is support for an employee being made redundant. And what that generally looks like is career coaching, some support in terms of courses or PDFs, and maybe a bit of group coaching as well. There's a lot of people that do it in the UK and worldwide. They're very old dinosaurs and they've been doing this for a very long time. So things are just a big machine. Mm-hmm. And we're doing it in a much more affordable, flexible human way. And it's essentially for businesses to help and be more human, more kind in how mm-hmm. they fire. What happens for businesses when they do this is that their reputation obviously gets better. The employees that stay in the business are more loyal because obviously you see someone being fired, someone in your team that get fired, just take a box and go. You kind of feel like, oh, crap, this is what's going to happen to me, you mm-hmm. know, in 6 months' time. If you see that they've been treated well, you're probably more inclined to stay in that business mm-hmm. and value your employer better. And it drives, yeah, more loyalty. Mm-hmm. And it's overall just a more kind way of treating humans, mm-hmm. which I think we're going to.
And there's a couple of things in there. One is about in a crowded marketplace, how do you stand out?
Do you mean in terms of competition?
Mm-hmm.
We stand out. We stand out because we really care.
Mm-hmm.
The big, I don't think I should give names, but the big guys that are out there have been around for many years, many decades. And what I've heard from people that have used them or been given outplacement is that they get a link to a drive mm-hmm. with a few PDFs on, here's what the ATS does, here what you should do with your CV, here's what you should do with your LinkedIn. Yes, it's always the same content. Yes, you can go and find everything online if you wanted to. What we do is that we really hold your hand
mm-hmm.
and you get an online course that we, you know, it's maybe 10, 15 minutes a day. Mm-hmm. You don't have to do it every day. You can dip in, dip out. If you've got a job interview that's coming in, you can skip to lesson 5 and go to how to prep for a job interview. And we've got a community, and a lot of these of our competitors don't have the community aspect. So right now we live in a WhatsApp People join the WhatsApp when they join our community, and people share stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, I've seen a job go by. Does anyone interested? We share our events and our workshops that are happening, and they can join for free. And then career coaching. I know some do individuals, some do group. Mm-hmm. We choose to do individual career coaching because everybody's career is different. Mm-hmm. And we really, really care. We've vetted all our coaches. They all have been interviewed by my business partner, but also by me. And even though I'm not a coach, I definitely hire on a more of a fit, mm-hmm. and how they envisage the world and how they want to treat people. So we're very big on treating people the Hustle Factory way and making sure that they get the right level of care. And yes, there's an element of AI and the computer and digitalization of information, but we really, really, really are super big on keeping the human connection, because mm-hmm. when life gets really hard, having a human on the other side of the phone or the screen is way more important than a PDF on a drive.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So how does that scale then? So if we think about your business model at the moment, you have coaches, but how does that scale, you know, on an international?
Yeah. Honestly, I think we'd love to be in the US in 5-10 years time. It's that we've mm-hmm. got, everything is online. We've got a platform. I don't know if you know Noom. It's a bit like, we'd love to have an app. So it's an app for weight loss, mm-hmm. but it's gamified. So you go through and you answer questions, and we'd love to do something like that. Mm-hmm. In terms of scaling and growth, mm-hmm. the content is there. It would be nice to have a better platform, something that works better from a user experience. But that's just a question of time, mm-hmm. And a bit of money. And then our coaches, we're just going to scale the amount of coaches that work with us. Mm-hmm. And we love our coaches, and all our coaches have slightly different specialities. Mm-hmm. And we love that we've got different sectors and different coaches that do different things, but we're essentially ready to ramp up whenever things go mm. crazy.
So you were talking about AI there mm. a moment ago, and I think that's quite interesting because it's a really hot topic at the moment. Mm. And I've seen a couple of different things very recently about this, but one of them, which I particularly liked, was a company called Sapia .ai. And I don't know whether you've come across them before, but essentially they're a piece of technology that companies put in. So when you apply for a role, it actually takes you through a Q&A. Mm. So rather than submitting your CV, you actually go through an online Q&A, and it is AI generated. But at the end of it, what you get as an individual for taking the time to do that is a report, basically, based on these are some of the things that came across in your profile, and these are some of the things you might want to think about working on based on the question and answers that mm. you've provided.
That's amazing.
And that, I think, is a fantastic way, because I am definitely a massive fan of ditching the CV. Now, I say that for a number of reasons, but mainly because we can't always say. So if you think about that role that you were talking about, where you were marketing director, where you got to that burnout stage, that wouldn't have predicted, the outcome of that role wouldn't have predicted success in what you're doing now. Mm-mm-mm. And yet that's what you have to talk about, yeah. to talk about, you know, kind of where that comes yeah. from. And that's what I find fascinating is how do we do that? How do we help people using technology? Yeah. And maybe that's the kind of thing to be thinking about, is absolutely. Where can we use it? Because it's, yes, we need a personal approach, but we also need to harness the technology.
Yeah. And I think, for me, I was doing a talk on AI last week. AI is never going to fully take over. Mm-hmm. It's always going to need humans in the back end. And so I think what I love is the integration between humans and AI. And I think, yeah, I agree with you. I think CVs have good things to offer. I think they're still important, but I think that it's not, you know, there's a company called Pollen, for example, that they've ditched CVs entirely, but they work with graduates. And I think that's a really good place mm-hmm. to not have a CV, is mm-hmm. when you're starting off and makes no sense. But I think we're incorporating AI in what we do, not only to make things more efficient, but also that we're able to understand better what people are about and being able to read through that data faster, mm-hmm. And see what the trends are, see what people want. I think there's still, CVs are still going to stick around for a little bit, and mm-hmm. there still needs to be a bit of lesson on that, but it's not an impossible task, and AI can help. I think it just needs to be used wisely.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Because I think if you think about maybe some of the people you've hired in the past, have you ever hired somebody that you didn't think, that on paper you didn't think was going to be a good fit?
So this is a funny one. When I was art director at Swoon, so a furniture business, I was hiring for a stylist, and actually two stylists, and they were using a website or a software, I can't remember, Workable, mm-hmm. something like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, you could see the amount of people that had applied and how mm-hmm. many people you had interviewed and how many people had been driven through the system. And about a month in, I think it was the ops director who kind of said, Astrid, you're going through a crazy amount of people. What are you doing? And I think that was probably, now in hindsight, and I'm just talking to you about it, that was probably a first sign of me caring about this side of business. Mm-hmm. I think I wanted to make sure that, yes, they had a good CV, but I wanted to make sure that I was giving everyone a chance mm-hmm. more than just on a CV. Mm-hmm. And so I was probably letting in more people to the next stage of first interviews by a good 75% more than anybody else. But I do believe that the women I hired, because there's two ladies, they were amazing. I believe that if I had solely gone on their CVs, they wouldn't have gotten the job mm-hmm. for sure.
Mm-hmm. So what made you change your mind about them? Was it how they sold themselves? Was it how they carried themselves?
I think it was a mixture of fit mm-hmm. for the business. And I think a CV will never, ever show that. Mm-hmm. I think it was the way they explained their roles, and they were able to add information to the CV that already existed. And it was, I think it was just that human aspect of, do they look at you in the eyes? Do they, mm-hmm. Are they friendly? Are you going to get on? I'm always very wary of trying to hire people that are different to me mm-hmm. as well. I don't want to hire mini clones, because then there's no point in having a team. But making sure that we're going to get on. Mm-hmm. I also love hiring people that I feel are smarter than me. Mm-hmm. So that I can learn from them and they can push things further than I ever would. Mm-hmm. That's always a big, big mm-hmm. like green flag for me. If I feel like, ooh, I really like you and I feel like you could bring way more to the business than I could, mm-hmm. then I'll probably give them a chance mm-hmm. Before anything else.
I think that's always interesting, is that shows a leader rather than a boss, because a leader allows people to be better than them and champions them to be better,
yeah.
to increase, you know, whatever they're trying to do is and be supportive of them and be their champion to be better. Because actually, yeah, fantastic. Because now I can get on and do the other things that I'm supposed to be doing rather than having to do part of your workload because you're
incapable of doing it.
Absolutely. Yeah. So talk to me a little bit about perhaps where you've had the opposite kind of effect and where you've had to release some people. Because I always think that's quite an interesting thing, and especially in your line of work, it's mm-hmm. good to talk about those kind of things. Yeah. But I think if we think about it from a business owner perspective, and you have a small business, you have a few people, and about trying to get to that decision of actually they're not right for the business.
Yeah, we sadly had to do that recently. I believe in transparency and a lot of communication, and I think that people will understand where you're coming from if you've given them enough time to figure out what they're going to do. I tend to tell my teams, you know, this is not working at the moment, or I've had feedback on this and we need to work on that, because otherwise we might have to let someone go. And I wouldn't say that to a team of juniors. I think it depends who you're talking to, obviously, but I was lucky enough to have teams of middleweight and seniors. And I try and stay as transparent as I can. I don't want to scare. I don't want to, you know, push them to go and find another job instantly, but it's about understanding how the business is going, mm-hmm. what we're trying to do, giving them a bigger perspective on everything. So, you know, when we pivoted from B2C to B2B, we explained what we were doing and why we were doing it. Are you okay to stay on the team if this is what we're still doing? The business is shifting. Is that okay with you? If they're not okay with it, then we need to like either figure out another role for them or figure out how they can change what they're doing to better fit within the business. Or maybe it's just a good time for them to go. Mm-hmm. I've been lucky enough to have people that are ready to pivot. I think when you're a startup, you're probably going to have a lot of team members that are ready to pivot. That's the startup mm-hmm. world. Mm-hmm. But I've had experiences in the past with people that didn't want to pivot, and mm-hmm. that's also okay. What I also tell my teams is to stay true to who they are and what they want to do. It's not because a business is going one way and you were hired 6 months ago to do something else that you should remain. Mm-hmm. Try and stay concentrated on what your career path should be and what you want to do. Mm-hmm. But I also believe that, you know, life is just a continuation of loads of little opportunities and chances. Mm-hmm. And that's how we all navigate what's mm-hmm. happening in our careers, right? Yeah, transparency, honesty. Sometimes I might be too honest. Who knows?
I think that's the risk, isn't it? You know, yeah. about being too honest, because you want people to understand where you're coming from and why you've made particular decisions. Mm. But actually, sometimes I think, again, when we're founders of businesses, we typically have a bit of a riskier gene, if you like, in us. And so actually we're quite happy 100%. To fly a bit closer to the wind than most people. And actually, if a lot of people understood your balance sheet, is that going to actually scare them more? But equally, I think in every business I've been in that I've really believed in what's happening, I've actually understood the balance sheet. I've understood the values. Mm. I've understood the direction, the mission, the vision. Mm. You know, I've understood where the business is going, and they've been open and honest about what they're trying to do and when and why and what happens and who's going to get involved.
Yeah.
And like you say, it's that transparency, isn't
it? Yeah. Yeah. And I think it depends. You know, I think a business with 3 employees is very different than a business with 45 employees. I don't think you give the same amount mm-hmm. of information. And that's when you need to start figuring out what you say to who. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we're not a huge team. So right now we're able to keep things quite transparent and honest. But let's talk again in 5 years. I probably have a different line.
Probably have, you know, several layers of management and, you know, multinational, global.
Yeah. But I also do believe in multi layers of management, and I don't mm-hmm. believe in the flat businesses. I think actually people grow better with managers, but they mm-hmm. have to be good managers, and everything trickles in from the top anyway. So
I think for me, every time people say they've got a flat structure, when you actually look at it, it's not a flat structure at all. Mm. I read somewhere the other day, and I quite like this actually, and it's something that I think, this would be quite interesting as a social experiment. But there was a company and the founder decided that he wanted to pay everybody a really decent sum of money because he wanted to keep them a bit. What he wanted was actually to make sure that people had a good life outside of work. And so he paid everybody the same amount of money. Mm. So that's how he tried to create a flat structure. Mm. But what happened was that the people who perhaps would have been paid a lot less were then able to pay off student debt. They were then able to buy their own homes. They were able to care for relatives. And those people that perhaps would have traditionally earned a little bit more actually became happier because there was more of a parity amongst the group of individuals. Mm. Now, I think that works in certain scenarios, but could you see something like that working?
Not for me. I think it's really interesting, and I probably should look into it more, but I do think that I believe in paying properly. Mm. I don't believe in working for free mm-hmm. whatsoever. And believe me, I've worked in the fashion industry for free, and that was not fun. But
although you're working for free right now, technically.
Well, no, I've got a business, and my business will be worth something.
Yeah, well, that's true. Yes, you're working towards that. I own it.
So it's very different. I agree. I'm not paid, mm-hmm. but my salary is in something else, mm-hmm. and at least that's how I see it. But yeah, I don't believe in paying. I don't believe in working for free. I also believe in. I think when you're part of a business, and you don't feel happy with your salary,
mm-hmm.
I think there's ways to ask for more. I think there's ways to understand if you're worth more.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that people that leave their jobs because of money, I feel like a lot of the time they probably haven't tackled that difficult conversation with HR where they wonder if they could have more.
Mm-hmm.
Again, a lot of women do that, but
mm-hmm.
I think there's a lot to be done in that area mm-hmm. of salaries. And I also believe in salary transparency
mm-hmm.
massively. And I think that we'll see more of that coming in the next few years as well. Mm-hmm. I think that's going to be crucial to better future of work and
mm-hmm.
better work life.
I think larger companies get it right to a certain extent where they have grades and they kind of say in this grade, you'll be paid between everybody in this grade is paid between X this and Y. As long as that X and Y is not actually a big jump, then I think that makes sense.
Agreed.
Because then that way you can do that. What I don't agree is when big companies do the year-end appraisal. So you might have a really bad leader or manager and they've not told you at all or all year like how you're doing. And then you have your year-end appraisal and I don't know, say it's out of five and you get a 3 out of 5 and you say, well, why was I graded a 3 out of 5? And they can't give you a reason other than, oh, well, actually, and you can tell this has happened to me because I'm quite passionate about it. When we sat in a room and we graded everybody, we couldn't put everybody at a 4 or a 5. We had to put some people at 3s and we didn't have a strong enough case for you to be a 4 or a 5. Sorry. So if you were just grading me, what would you have graded me? Oh, probably about a 4.5, actually.
But that makes no sense.
But I'm graded at 3 though. So how does that make sense? Yeah. And I think that's where, for me, again, it lacks the transparency.
Yeah.
Throughout your year, how are you doing? How are you telling employees? How are you doing? Mm-hmm. Are you improving? Are you not improving? Is there some challenges? What do we need to work on? Where's the learning here? What can we do to help you get to where we're expecting you to
be? And I think L&D teams are not spoken enough about. You know, they're really, I think upskilling is super important, especially at the moment. You know, get people to learn about AI and get people to learn about whatever they want that's going to make them better at their job. Because actually keeping that talent in is also really crucial. And I can see that what's happened to you is pretty crap. I've never been in the corporate world, so I've never had those issues. But what I have always tried to do is pay people fairly and probably a little bit more if I can, because I would like people that are good to stay. And I'm always, I think it's really, really important that people have those conversations about money, about their value in the business, without necessarily feeling like they can't, you know, can't talk to HR or can't talk to their managers or whatever it is. But I know that it's a difficult conversations, but they're so important to have.
And how do you incentivize people in your business?
To do better, to do well. So we're actually currently working on that, because we're thinking about doing the vested equity for people that stay with us long enough. We're still really, really small, so it hasn't quite come onto our radar as much as if there was already 10 or 15 people in there. But I think equity will definitely be a big part of how we want to do things. I love that people are able to own a piece of my business and that they love it as much as, well, I mean, I don't think anyone's going to love it as much as my co-founder, let's face it. But if they could love it a little bit and want good for it as much as I do, then I think I will have done something really well.
I think what's good about having a smaller business with less people is you can be flexible to a certain degree with benefits, for example, or rewards. You can be a bit more flexible, whereas when you're bigger, it gets a bit more difficult, and we come back to those grades and actually what each of those grades gets in terms of benefits. And again, I can see why you would do that, and I think that's important to have that kind of structure in a bigger business. But in a smaller business, it's just as easy to say, hey, let's go out Thursday lunchtime and we'll go bowling, or we'll go and do an activity together, we'll go to an escape room or whatever it might be. Let's just go do something social together. And then it's about building those relationships outside outside of what's happening.
It's the culture.
Mm-hmm.
I think the culture is really important, and that we work on really hard. Mm-hmm. I think the culture comes from the top, 100%. We're super flexible. That's one thing. And people that work with us can show up to the office anytime they want. There's probably going to be some core hours as we grow. Mm-hmm. I think that's something I've been having a lot of conversations with people that run their businesses with 10, 15 people that way, where right now we're small enough that I can say, do whatever you want.
Yeah.
In 10 people's time, I'll probably have to start putting some kind of rules in place. But I think rules are there because everyone needs to be cared for,
mm-hmm.
and not everyone has the space at home to have mm-hmm. a little office,
mm-hmm.
and everyone deserves to have something somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean you have to always come, but I think it's important as well for teams to be together,
mm-hmm.
especially for the juniors.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
You know, they need that, but not every day and not 9 to 5 mm-hmm. every day. I don't think that works anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, yeah, flexibility, parental leave is super important for us. Although it's really hard when you're a small company.
It's very hard.
So hard.
It's very
hard. No one really talks about that either. And having to plan, you know, I haven't had to deal with it, but mm-hmm. it will come one day. And mm-hmm. I hope that I'm able to have enough foresight and enough cash in the bank mm-hmm. to be able to manage that.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think that there's enough people out there that are campaigning for it. But I do feel like governments probably need to help small businesses a little bit more with this.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, flexible working is super important. And trust.
Mm-hmm.
I think why people like working with me and with us as a business is that we trust them to do their work. And don't get me wrong, I can be pretty harsh. If the work's not done, then there's a conversation to be had. But mm-hmm. if you want to go and work, you know, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and tell me that you're off on Tuesday morning because your kids, I don't know what, got sports day or whatever, mm-hmm. then go for it. You know, mm-hmm. that's totally fine by me. Mm. As long as the work gets done, who cares?
Absolutely. We always say that to our teams is in our gyms that we own is get done what needs to be done. If as a manager, you need to be at home one day a week or an afternoon to just get through your administration and just have some quiet time, because there's no quiet space in a gym.
Yeah.
Then go do that. Like, or if you feel like you need to start at 10 because you're dropping your kids off, or you've got a school play, or you've got other caring responsibilities, because we often talk about responsibilities as about children, don't we? But there are other responsibilities 100%. As well, aren't there?
Yeah.
You know, caring responsibilities for elderly parents, for disabled family members, whatever it might be.
For
everybody's
yourself.
Yeah, absolutely, for yourself. There is something going on in everybody's life. And actually, I think what happened during the pandemic, or I think what's been really interesting as part of the pandemic, is that we've become more individualistic. And actually, we've changed our approach and our attitude as businesses towards individuals.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether you've kind of seen that shift.
Yeah, and I would agree. I think that there's a really fine line. I think it's really important for individuals to have that space.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we need to be careful that we don't go too far down that line, that our teams don't know each other, that juniors aren't able to learn from seniors, that managers are held accountable for what they're doing and that they're able to communicate. And I think that there's loads of amazing tools out there to make everything run smoothly, you know, remote. But I think that nothing can beat human interaction.
I agree.
Even if that's one, I think I think it's Amelia from Bold Bean Company. Mm-hmm. They're all remote, but one day a month they all meet.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one day a month is not asking too much.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a great way for people to stay in touch and get to know each other. And I
absolutely.
Think that's so important.
Yeah, I think having an anchor day like that is critical.
Mm.
I look at various people doing remote only roles, and I think there is always the risk of disconnection or no connection, not even disconnection, just no connection to start with.
Yeah.
Because it's the micro interactions that you have. It's the conversations at the water cooler. Mm-hmm. It's the, I just heard you on that call. Mm. Did you know actually that you could do XYZ instead? Yeah. Or have you thought about da 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 da?
Yeah.
And it's those kind of interactions that are missing when we're all remote and not mm. anywhere. You can still be flexible mm. and have an anchor day. You can mm-hmm. still be flexible and come in and yeah. say, hey, look, we're going to be here Mondays and Wednesdays or Thursdays or whatever, 10 till 2, definitely. You know, everybody's in or yeah. whatever works, because you then recognize and you see, and leaders see if people are struggling, because mm. that's the other thing. If someone's struggling, it's not always obvious, even when you're face to face, but typically remotely, it's not always obvious that it's them, and they can mask it much better agreed. If they're remote.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah,
because you don't see the
face, the facial expressions, the jittery, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Super, super important.
So we're getting to our point in our interview where I ask all of my people, what would be your one piece? And I'm sure there's a bookload of advice, but try and think about one piece of advice that you would give to other budding entrepreneurs or small business owners.
Gosh, there's so many. You're right. I think go for it mm-hmm. would be my biggest tip. I think you could and aw about an idea, a business for years. Mm-hmm. I think I've written about 5 or 6 business plans at this stage in my life, and they're all tucked away on a little sheet of paper somewhere. And then there's a stage where I got to this one, and you know, this is my second business I've built, and yeah, I could have tucked it away again and gone and found a job, but actually I was like, no, I'm just going to go for it. Worst comes to worst, it fails. Mm-hmm. Is that the end of the world? I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. You're probably going to learn loads from that. Mm-hmm. And I actually have a lot of respect for entrepreneurs that have gone down that street of building something and it collapsing. But I think they come out even stronger and go on to do something even better. So yeah, go for it.
I agree. And you think about things, you can overthink things, mm-hmm. and it is going to go. There are some things that are going to go drastically wrong mm-hmm. when you start a business. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter how much planning you've got. It doesn't matter how much finance you've got. There are things that are going to go wrong regardless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you kind of, that's why I really like your phrase of that was when you had your mini MBA, because there is nothing like it, is there?
Yeah.
You can do what you like at university, study whatever. You can study business studies. You can, you know, talk to people. But until you're in it, you don't understand the pressure of, you know, how am I going to pay my people? How mm-hmm. am I going to pay myself the rent, you know, the electricity bill?
Yeah.
What's next? Is this the right thing to be doing?
Yeah.
Is it going to happen today? is today going to be the day? Or maybe it's next week.
But be really passionate. If you're going to go for it, be really passionate, because it's going to be your life for years. And you really want to care about what you're doing, because otherwise you're going to be very bored and wonder why you started your business.
I think that's very true. You have to be passionate about it.
Yeah.
And then if you're not, don't do it. Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I agree. Go for it. Do it. Because the worst thing that can happen is that you've done it and you've learned some things mm-hmm. and actually you take that learning mm-hmm. somewhere else.
And you become in charge of your own, of your future. I remember I've probably been in full-time employment for me out of my 15 years of career. I've probably been 2 years with like PAYE and all mm-hmm. the securities that come with it. And actually I've discovered that people that are PAYE probably don't have as much money in their savings account as anybody else that is either an entrepreneur, freelancer, contractor. And actually you can, that if security is what you're looking for, mm-hmm. you can create that in another way, being an entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, maybe start by dipping a toe and mm-hmm. and doing something small on the side and then let that grow. And there's loads of different ways of going about it. But mm-hmm. I think going for it and being passionate is definitely crucial.
Really admire a young woman called Sally, who started a business called Hunch. And I don't know whether you've heard of it before, but definitely somebody I'll put you in touch with, because I think there's some alignment there. So she's built a platform mainly for graduates, but also for people that are doing career transitions.
Cool.
And the platform is about advertising jobs. But when you go on there, you load your CV and you answer a couple of questions. and then it matches the jobs for you. So rather than you sitting for hours searching, scrolling, doom scrolling through LinkedIn, Indeed, and all the other places, it does the hard work for you and says, here's some matches. What do you think? You know, do you want to apply for it? And it kind of connects you to things. And what I really liked about what Sally did, she only launched it very recently, but what she did was she said, give me some feedback. Just posted the link and said, give me the feedback. And she responded to everybody that gave her feedback. Mm. And she had quite a lot of people giving her feedback about the platform from a UX perspective. But that's the kind of thing where she's kind of said, okay, well, I need to see what people actually really think. So I've built it and I think it looks good and I think it works well, but let's see what it actually does in the real world.
Yeah.
She's doing her market research and she's saying, hey, give me some feedback. And you've kind of got to have a bit of a tough hide about those things, don't you?
Absolutely. And I think it's about, it's kind of in the same vein as finding your tribe and finding the people that will be able to give you either feedback or support or send you, you know, their own links to something that didn't work or worked, and getting enough people in your ecosystem that are going to give you that support in what you're doing. And, but yeah, you need to be open to feedback, open to a lot of slamming of all the negative things to grow. And you have to have a tough skin, definitely.
You do. And not just from people that you don't know, from people that you do know as well.
Yeah, well, it needs to be even thicker for those, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Because they care about you. They want you to be successful. And not everybody understands an entrepreneur mindset of, I'm just going to go do it. I'll see what happens. I'll worry about it later. Yeah. Don't worry about the risk. It will be fine. Everything will be okay. Not everybody understands that mindset because they want the safety and security and they have a different mindset, which is absolutely fine, but they want you to be okay. And so their doubts can sometimes become your doubts.
Your doubts, exactly. Which is why I go back to finding your tribe. I've joined many communities of founders and, you know, women founders, tech founders, ed tech founders. You know, I've got loads of little different WhatsApp groups that are happening, Impact, just so that you've got enough people that are going through the same hardship than you are. And I see the ones that are coming out of it. You go through, it takes a while to build a business. Mm-hmm. I've been at it for 4 years, a year and a half trading. I'm probably expecting at least another year and a half to 2 years before I can really pull my head up the water, not just be paying for nursery fees and say, okay, I think we're good. This is a little bit, I'm a bit more on a conveyor belt than I am on a crazy roller coaster. But I don't think I'm going to appreciate the conveyor belt if I haven't gone through the roller coaster, and I won't learn as much anyway. But having those people around me that are showing me, I posted on LinkedIn the other day about raising and how I, as everything I've been explaining in this conversation, pivoting and B2C, B2B. And one of the founders messaged me and said, it took me 3 years to raise. And if I hadn't been transparent, if I hadn't got called out to my community, I wouldn't have had the example of someone taking that amount of time when everybody else is saying, oh, it takes 6 months to 9 months to raise. No, it doesn't. She just told me it took her 3 years. Now, it doesn't mean that that's the rule for everyone.
Yeah.
But I think finding the people that are able to be your cheerleaders and your support, and also being transparent and giving you these little nuggets of truth will help you as an entrepreneur to continue going and to believe in yourself, because actually that's the core of it all, right? It's believing in your product, believing in your business, and keep going even when you're deep, deep down in some horrible pit. You have to keep going. And it always, one of my favorite sentences is, everything happens for a reason. I got fired in August of 2022. I was pregnant, 6 months pregnant. My mum was very sick at this stage and she died in November. And I wouldn't have had August, September, October to spend with her if I had been in that job. And yes, it was crap and it was horrible to be made redundant. But actually, it was the best 3 months I was given to just be with her. And I feel like, in hindsight, these things always come back, right? You mm-hmm. always, you can see why things have happened. You just have to trust in the moment that mm-hmm. everything happens for a reason, and this is why it's happening to you.
And you just got to ride through that wave exactly. to make that happen, haven't
exactly.
you?
Yeah, mm. exactly.
Well, thank you very much for your time today, Astrid. I appreciate lovely. You coming to talk to me. Thank you for listening or watching on YouTube. You have been listening to Astrid Limmel from The Hustle Factory and Amy Bull.